And welcome everyone to Renegade Radio. I am your host, Andy Lowe. It is Thursday noon, and it is time to explore with business owners and professionals how we can break some of these rules of conventional thinking and create success in the marketplace. And today we're going to explore some interesting controversial topics when it comes to conventional thinking and traditional mechanisms and methods of communication. We're going to be visiting with Michael Coffey. He's the CEO of Comitrex. And Michael, I understand we're going to be talking a little bit about VoIP and FOIP technologies today. Is that right?
Yes, VoIP and FOIP, right. Or VoIP and FOIP.
Well, fantastic. Well, Mike, I'd like to first off welcome you to the show. Thank you for being here and joining us. So let's just start with an overview of Comitrex. Tell me a little bit about who you guys are and what your business is,
sure.
And then we'll get into some of those details.
Well, we founded Comitrex in 1990 to develop value-adding products for the telecommunications equipment manufacturer. And they're based on the PC. At the time, in 1990, using a PC as the foundation of a telecommunications system was still somewhat novel. It wasn't until 1984 that IBM came out with the PC-AT. It had a hard drive, making it practicable to use a PC for a telecom system. Well, we grabbed onto that and decided to develop the software, and at that time, hardware. We don't need the hardware anymore because of IP, but to develop the software that equipment developers would need to be as efficient as possible in developing unique communication systems.
Well, I mean, back then, I mean, even thinking about developing any kind of system, that was Greek to most people. I mean, I'm thinking back in that early 1984 kind of time frame, mm-hmm. The most advanced thing I knew about a computer was an Atari 2600. I mean, you know, the idea of a PC and something with a keyboard was almost non-existent to most of us.
Well, I graduated from Tech in 65, and believe it or not, took a full course of digital electronics. Back then, that was, I figured out, oh, that's neat, that's cool, that's brand new stuff. And so I went to work as a computer designer right out of Georgia Tech. And one thing led to another. I ran engineering departments, but the sales guys kept grabbing me and dragging me off to the field because I could talk. You know, not every engineer
can do that.
Exactly. That's what my wife tells me. And so I worked my way into marketing, and finally an old friend of mine, Cliff Shornack, and I founded Comitrex in 1990, and we based the company on a lot of work that we had done at other companies, and we saw that telecom was terribly inefficient. We looked at the PC industry, at the way it was evolving, and it was very efficient because of the way businesses all over the world worked anonymously yet cooperatively to develop very complex systems. Telecom needed to take on that model, and we thought that we would change the world by starting a company that would develop the software to make that or facilitate that.
Okay. Well, now, so that's software side, but now we're getting into hardware side, and we're seeing some changes, right? The telephone system that we know is becoming very antiquated, and I guess it's poised to be phased out, but we're not at a point that we can phase it out completely. So what's stopping us from flipping over to a purely digital communication world versus still being rooted in some of the copper wiring that we have now?
Well, there's a lot of stress in the telecom industry. You've got aging infrastructure. I mean, stuff is literally falling apart, but operators are reluctant to invest in the old technology. They see that telephony based on the internet protocol, the internet, if you will, IP, mm-hmm. Is the way of the future, and they want to make their investments in that. But the global plant of telecom infrastructure, you just can't overestimate the inertia of it. It's terribly difficult to introduce new technologies because the investments globally are so massive. But back in the late 90s, we discovered that you could use IP, packet technology, to route calls rather than the old mode of switching calls. Switching calls based on the old model of relays, actually closing metallic contacts. Or who was it? Ernestine, the Lily Tomlin character that would plug in the plug to connect the call. Well, now we don't do that. We route calls. We break the digital information that represents the call, our voice today, for example, into packets and send the packets over the internet. That is challenging the industry, especially in the area of fax. Voice, we figured out quite a while ago. And so today, our focus as a company and mine individually, I happen to be the co-chair of an industry group that's focused very, very closely on doing something about making fax over IP work.
Okay, so let's distinguish this a little bit then. So we got voice and we got fax. Mm-hmm. So first off, let's talk about voice. Voice over IP. If I were just talking voice, let's say I took fax out of the equation mm-hmm. for a minute. For whatever reason, fax just didn't exist. We can right. erase it from everybody's mind. If we were talking telecommunications purely in terms of voice, would there be anything that should stop us from flipping over from the current, you know, we'll call it the relay switch, the metallic connections, mm-hmm. et cetera, to switching over to a fully digital world? I mean, could we just go completely VoIP and never look back?
No, nothing, no stopping us. The technology was in its infancy back in the 90s, and the industry has had a decade and a half to figure it out. And we figured it out. It works. We use FOIP, VOIP, mm-hmm. Every day and don't even know it. A very high percentage of international voice calls are over IP trunks, in undersea cables, fiber, and so on. So it's just a matter of time, and there's work going on right now, the FCC and other lofty bodies, to plan for the grand switchover from the old network to the new network. However, we have to do something about fax. You said something about, well, why doesn't it just go away? And I guess there are a lot of engineers out there that would just prefer it that way.
Well, let's talk about what's different about it. I mean, just as it sits right now, before we even talk about it going away, yeah. What is so different about the data packets required for a fax mm-hmm. versus the packets required for voice? Why are those animals two different things?
Well, the packets are the same, but the requirements for packet delivery are different. When you and I speak to each other, I can see you. I see your physical mannerisms and so on. You're nodding your head, which encourages me to speak to you. Okay. In voice, you can also, if I couldn't see you, you could also listen. And if there were a slight blemish in the transport of my voice to yours, your ears would fill it in. And if your ears couldn't fill in the blanks, your mind could, because you know what I'm talking about. Well, if you look at a fax machine, that is a machine. There's no person. There's no forgiving human ear there. So the protocols that define how a fax talks to each other have requirements for signal quality and timing that were set down before the internet was ever envisioned to be a transport for fax. And the timing requirements are very tight and very precise. Well, when you have a switch circuit, the metallic contact, if you will, you can have very precise timing. But when you break up a fax conversation, if you will, into packets and route those packets over the internet, and as you may know, packet number one may take a different route from packet number two or three and so on, they can arrive at different times, and sometimes the timing requirements cannot be met. So we had to come up with a new protocol that would make up for those timing perturbations and allow a fax to work over the internet. The problem today is that the international carriers aren't necessarily routing IP fax calls over the internet. They're using the same routing algorithms that they have for voice. So they'll throw a fax call over a route that has IP, then the old network, then the new network, then the old network. By the time you get there, the timing's destroyed and it doesn't work. That's what we have found with the testing that we're doing, which I'd like to circle back and go into, because okay. I think it's very important necessary. You asked a question of what is stopping voice, nothing, what's stopping fax. Really, what's stopping fax is the testing that we've done, the analysis we're doing, the recommendations they're making, getting accepted. We think we've found out all the not all the problems, but the big problems. And we have made recommendations to the international standards bodies to make some changes to allow carriers to act on our recommendations and make FOIP work in international calls. It does pretty, it does quite well over non-international calls. There are carriers in North America, for example, that have IP carriers that have a very broad reach. Just about anywhere you want to send a fax, you can send it over a pure IP connection, and it works great. But when we get to the international call where you don't know if it's going from here to Bangladesh telephone or something like that and then on to Hong Kong, that's when it gets dicey. And so we have to learn how to route fax calls over IP properly.
Okay, so thinking about breaking down that technology and trying to solve that hurdle and get through that, what comes to my mind, and again, not being super knowledgeable in this area, I can request a web page off of my computer and it'll pull that page back. I can request an image over the internet and it'll pull that image back, and I don't have any problems with that. If I can take a document and I can scan it into a digital image, it's an image, I should be able to send that through the internet without any problem. So why even keep fax as it is around? Why not just scan everything in digitally and send electronic copies of stuff and let fax go the way of the dinosaur?
Well, to look at it from one end to the other, you have a lot of that. Often, I'm a fax guy, and I'll scan a document and send it because it means that my prospective customer or customer doesn't have to get up often and go to the fax machine. Of course, if they have a fax server, they don't have to do that. But it's very convenient. But we're geeks. If we're not geeks, we're professionals that use computers. You've got computers on your desk here every day. And we tend to think that, well, if it's that way for me, it's that way for everyone. Not so. Not so. There's, way north of 100 million fax terminals installed around the world. And a small sliver of those are the fax terminals that hardly get used, but you have to have them, because if you're in business, you'd better have access to fax. Oh, can I fax it to you? Oh, fax it to me. This sort of thing. You have to have it. And who's going to pay the bill to replace those 100 million fax terminals?
Well, and that's a great question, because especially in a smaller corporation, like a small business, sole provider, whatever, no big deal. You take your fax machine, you pull it, you put a scanner in. I mean, it's cost of the hardware or whatever and not necessarily huge. But one thing I do know is that in larger organizations, to replace something like a telephone, something that has relatively low cost and seems fairly easy to do, there's a huge cost associated with the operation of going in and replacing that device. I had no idea until I was in the wireless security industry, and we were looking to connect some things to the network to monitor wireless, and there's tremendous cost. I mean, just to take a device and plug it into a facility like a retail store, for example, there can be hundreds of dollars of cost per unit to make that switch. So when you think of hundreds of thousands of fax machines, there's tremendous cost in the corporate world for that switch out.
Well, it's not only the equipment cost, it's the people inertia too.
That's what I mean. It's not the equipment itself. It's the people you got to pay involved in the process to move that piece of equipment.
There's hundreds of people in one location of a large organization, and they know where the fax machine is. They use it. You don't want to take it away, or they'll really get upset. right now, our sister company, NetGen Communications, has a device. It's called an analog telephone adapter. Its job is to take what we call legacy telephones, POTS phones, if you will, the old-timey phones, analog, and legacy fax machines, regular fax terminals, and enable them to be plugged into the internet. That's why it's called an adapter, analog telephone adapter. It's a fairly new product, and we're seeing You know, my eyes keep getting bigger and bigger at the types of applications that people are coming up with. But one we're looking on right now, working on right now, is a very large public university. And they are looking at going to, well, they're going to completely replace their telecom infrastructure. But guess what? They're looking to purchase about 1,000 of these ATAs, we call them, to do what? To enable their existing fax machines on their campus and their remote campuses to be used on the new digital infrastructure. That's an excellent example of the answer to your question, why are they still around? Because people don't want to change. Change is hard.
Yeah, change always is.
Yep. Yep. And so in telecom, you're looking at fax as we know it being around for at least 10 years, but fax in new forms, because it's so doggone easy to use for decades, of course. I guess, you know, I'm too doggone old probably to figure out some of the new things, but, we'll have auto holograms and this kind of thing to transport images in ways that we can't imagine. But right now, fax needs to be cleaned up in order for the global infrastructure to move from the old network to the new network. And that's what I work on just about every day.
Do you see any of the movement towards mobile, people with tablets, with handheld devices, phones, et cetera, do you see any of that as having any kind of impact or threat to the fax market in the near term?
Well, actually, it's been quite the opposite. There are applications you can get for your smartphone that enable you to send a fax from your smartphone. There are companies that have that as a hosted application where you have a document. You don't necessarily have a printer with you. Maybe you're in a hotel and you want something printed. Well, you ask your hotel operator, what's your fax number? They give it to you. You're on your smartphone, bing, your document shows up on the hotel fax machine from your smartphone.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the testing that you're doing. So you're part of the I3 Forum. Tell us a little bit about that, what you're doing down there and what some of this testing is that you're doing to try to improve fax over IP for the future.
Okay, sure. Well, the voice started getting to be pretty smooth, and we were getting it, you know, well figured out by the middle of the last decade. And at that time, carriers started to fax-enable their infrastructure. Of course, if they didn't have that new protocol I referred to, it's called T38, by the way, that makes it reliable, theoretically, to send a fax over IP, then they couldn't participate. Either they were voice only or just data. Well, they started replacing their infrastructure with T38-capable so-called gateways and border controllers. And so because of that, enterprises and carriers began to say, oh, wow, the other guys are supporting fax. I better support fax. And they started to work on it. Well, cost problems. Major problems. And as an equipment vendor, someone kind of in the field of fire, we felt it, got the arrows in our back. And so I and a handful of other members of the SIP forum, and I'll explain that in a minute, decided to get together. I remember it vividly because it was the week that the financial meltdown 4 years ago, this coming September. We met in San Francisco and to try to figure out what we could do about these problems. And it didn't take us long to conclude that, well, we couldn't do anything about about the problems just now, because we needed to learn more about the problems before we could even hope to come up with some kind of solution. So as members of the SIP forum, and SIP stands for Session Initiation Protocol, it in lieu of touch tones and ringy ding dings and so on with the old network, there are computer protocols that are used to initiate and manage telecommunication sessions, otherwise known as phone calls. And as SIP has become ubiquitous, 10, 15 years ago, there were multiple protocols. But as things go typically in tech, one of the, it's more efficient for us to settle on one protocol. And so SIP one out over others. And so it's become ubiquitous. And the SIP Forum is an association of telecom equipment vendors and academics that are interested in promoting SIP through standards recommendations, best practice recommendations, interop testing, and this sort of thing. And so we said, well, what we need to do is to create an FOIP task group to address these problems. And I'm the current co-chair of that task group, responsible for the testing of facts in international calls. Well, a couple of years after that, the chairman of the SIP forum stumbled onto the chairman of the I3 forum, a charming Italian fellow, and they started talking about the respective organizations. The I3 forum, by the way, has over 40 telecommunications operators as members, over 1.6 billion subscribers in over 80 countries. So this is the group. This is the group that's responsible.
Yeah, nobody's wanting to get left out here.
These are the, if you want to know something about what's going on in the carrier community, the I3 forum is it. And you know, they are responsible for making the recommendations and standards to their membership to enable them to go from the old network to the new network. That's it. So they said, well, facts, for the reasons I've explained, there's critical timing and so on, is a special case. They decided to form an FOIP task group. So they said, well, wait a minute. You have an FOIP task group? Yeah, I have an FOIP. Well, they ought to be working together. Really, if you look at the problem, the equipment vendors can't solve it by themselves because we can't control a route, and because they're secretive, we don't know necessarily how the carriers are using our stuff unless they got a problem. Then they come to us. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the carriers don't necessarily know the protocols and the equipment, of course, the way we do because we developed it. By working together, though, we can bring the two pieces of the puzzle together to be able to test, analyze the problem, and recommend how we're going to solve it. That's what we decided to do a little over 2 years ago, and we've been testing continuously since. We have published what we call our Phase 1 test report. It's on each of our respective websites. The testing was performed with our flagship product, Kometrics' flagship product called Bladeware. Bladeware is a software product that runs on either Linux or Windows servers, and it enables so-called cloud-based or hosted service providers to affordably offer fax services. Of course, their service networks today are all IP, and IP has been rapidly progressing as a percentage of all calls served in the world, especially in the more advanced economies like the U.S., Europe, and so on. Okay, so what we did was we asked for volunteers within the I3 membership, and 14 of these carriers raised their hand and said, we'll help. So what we did was we installed in 14 carrier test labs, Australia, China, the Middle East, Europe, and North America, our Bladeware server, to serve as a test, both a test stimulus and test recipient, if you will, article under test, by sending faxes to each other internationally, recording the call for later analysis. Now, we went through that for almost a full year before we had collected enough data to start drawing some conclusions and to come out with our Phase 1 test report. One of our conclusions was that we need to do further testing, slightly different, so we could collect different data and get a little bit different view or perspective on the problems. Well, we've done that, Phase 2 testing, and that report is in draft form. So we've done the testing. We have a little bit more to do, but we've been able to come to some rather strong conclusions that we think that kind of constitute the silver bullet we can fire at this problem and get the results we're looking for.
So what's in your way now? Is it just, is it a time question? Is it a capital question? Is it regulatory bodies that you've got to clear? I mean, what's the obstacle for bringing this
to life? It's a little bit of the latter, and it's a lot of marketing.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
I've been involved in standards before that I thought were fantastic. And, you know, as a technical guy, I figured, well, you know, it's obvious to any technical guy that reads this thing what the benefit is. That doesn't work. The world doesn't work that way. You have to market it. But to back up just a little bit, what we have done is we have found that, you know, we can say to the carriers, well, you guys aren't ready. You haven't done the testing. You're not routing FOIP calls for success. You're routing FOIP calls the way you did voice calls, and you can't do that. We can't fault them because the standards, the SIP standards that I mentioned a moment ago, don't support routing, what we call intelligent routing of FOIP calls. Fax is over 162 years old. That surprised a lot of people. In its current form, it's about 32 years old. But the way the carriers have worked is that you place a call, a fax call, just like any call. And that if the endpoint terminal makes that funny noise you've heard, mm-hmm. everyone that's used the fax machine's heard that noise. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way that the person or the machines have learned that this is going to be a fax call, not a voice call.
Okay. So first off, let me ask this. When it comes to your target, who is it that you are targeting with your technology? Is it the carriers?
Yeah. Well, not with as the end user. But our primary customer is the equipment vendor, mm-hmm. OEM, that that takes the licenses our technology and embeds it in their equipment. But we also have a sister company, NetGen Communications, that markets to end-user service providers.
Okay.
I wanted to finish up on this.
Yeah, it's always tough when you're doing a radio interview. You talk for a little bit, and then you get choked up, and you're trying to clear your throat and get some water and make your point. And
so I was saying that we can't fault the carriers for doing it the way they're doing it because the standards didn't support otherwise. We realize that, and we have written changes to two very critical SIP standards to allow them to do that. Pardon me. That's the... the standards part. Now we have to market it. Now we have to sell it. That's one reason I was interested in this spot on your show. You know, if there's one guy out there that I can influence to take a look at RFC 3840 and RFC 3841, it's worth the whole time.
And who would that guy be?
That guy would be a weenie, a geek.
I don't know how many hands you're going to get raised on that one, Mike.
A geek within a service provider or carrier organization, okay. or even an equipment vendor that markets to them.
Okay, so you can be a carrier or an equipment vendor.
So I speak every chance I get at forums, mm-hmm. symposiums, any chance I get to let people know what we've done, why we've done it, the testing results, and what the benefits are going to be if you do something about it. Actually, the changes that we're recommending are easy, fall off a log easy technically. But when you're looking at the monumental infrastructure of the global telecom network, nothing's easy. You know, it's hard because of the amount of it. So this isn't going to be overnight. However, we've got a kind of a ticking time bomb. You've got the regulatory agency saying we need to switch. Remember the television switch a few years ago? Mm-hmm. Same kind of thing, but that's nothing compared to what we're talking about. But they're saying we're going to have to make this switch, and we don't want to have to say, well, we're not ready. We haven't figured the fact stuff out. Okay. So there is an urgency about all of this that we're feeling and seeing every day.
So with that going on, you know, I get what you guys are doing with the, you know, with the test groups, and I get the carriers and the equipment manufacturers. As the end user, as a business owner out there who relies on fax communications day to day to drive revenue inside of the business, What does that person need to know right now about this technology and about what's going on in this market?
Well, first off, you need to be a big fan of what we're doing because it's going to result in reduced costs. Right now, a lot of service providers will put in an all IP PBX hosted PBX for you, or even an on-premises PBX, and they'll say, you better keep your old fax lines for fax. Why? Well, because it's not as reliable as you might want or require. That needs to stop. And actually, we have part of our promotional campaigns for one of our new products, quote, stop telling your subscribers to keep their POTS line for fax. Okay, if you can get rid of the POTS lines, right away you're saving $40 a month for every line. But that's trivial compared to the lowered cost of equipment, lower cost of maintenance, and the lower cost of service fees to your carriers, your provider, your service provider, your access provider. Right now, if you try to send an international FOIP call, much of it's going to be routed over the older network for reliability reasons, and that costs more. So if we're successful, everyone's costs are going down. By the way, our revenues will go way up, which is one reason I'm so interested in this. I mean, it's, being a weenie myself, I love all of this stuff, but it's going to result in significant increase in revenues for Cometrix and our sister company, NetGen Communications.
Okay. So we're hoping you make more money and other people pay less money, and that's a win-win.
Yeah.
I like the proposition.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess the note to our business owners is challenge your service provider to move you to the digital and stop paying for the POTS lines.
You can do that today with our stuff, by the way. Mm-hmm. If your fax calls are, well, you can do it regardless of where your faxes are. But your faxes, if they're regional or national in reach, you're good to go today.
Do I need to engage your company, or do I need to get my service provider
to engage
you?
Your service provider.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, I need to make sure that Cometrix is a household name to my service provider.
Yep.
If I say that name and he doesn't know it, I either need to introduce him or get a new service provider.
Well, put the accent on the next last syllable, Cometrix.
Cometrix. I'll get this right.
Right.
All right. So let's try that one more time. Cometrix.
Yes.
All right. Good deal.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we get it right before we're done, because I think I've called it about three different syllable emphasis in wrong places here so far in the show, but that's good. Mike, anything else people need to know about this FOIP before we wrap up here today?
I think we've covered it. Your questions have been great, and you've let me run on.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing this. I mean, I know it's a super exciting subject to you. For those of us that aren't as technically inclined, it may be a little bit mind-numbing, but it sounds like it's important. It's definitely going to have an effect on the future of business, and anything that affects business and affects revenues in those businesses is of interest to us and to our listeners. So
good.
Thanks for sharing with us today.
Thank you, Andy.
For those of you listening, we appreciate you tuning in. Tune in each and every week with Renegade Radio, brought to you by RenegadeConcepts.com and the good folks here at Business Radio X. I've been your host, Andy Lowe, and next time, join us as we continue to explore breaking these conventional boundaries to create unique success. Remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.